Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob, R8XFT.
Vice Virtuoso.
Narad.
VS.
Welcome to Modcast 79. Joining me today are...
Narad the Forgiven.
VS.
Kokiel.
Of course, I'm Rob, 8XFT. Let's say I created Illyria, which I have done, and Illyria made its way into the next expansion pack, then I could use the ideas for Illyria for something else, potentially.
Mm-hmm. Or in Civ 6 specifically, an alternate leader, right? Like that. So yeah. You're even at less risk of being obsolete now.
Yeah, Civ 6 is much more friendly that way.
Absolutely.
Because then I can take the base civilization, and then I can paste my leader on as an alternative leader, and at least part of my efforts aren't, poof, gone.
Oh, shit, Teo's as their leader. Oh, well.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I wish they'd have done differently is the colour scheming, because I do think that each civ should have had a colour scheming, not each leader, personally.
Yeah, the usual axe to grind.
Yeah.
We were hitting the wall so hard in Civ 5 on just unique colour schemes.
Yeah.
That civ's Magnolia, the other one is cream. So, yeah. You know, they're all right.
Yeah.
There'd be discussions of, like, can we use this blue with this green? Because we need blue and green, and there are 30 different blue and green combinations already taken. And
yeah, I think there was more modding discord, as it were, about colors than about anything else.
So, today, guys, then, we've been talking about what the modding scene's like at the moment compared to how it was at this point in Civ 5, i.e. at this point, Gods and Kings has been released, but not Brave New World. So what do we think then? What's it like compared to then?
Well, my problem in answering that question is I didn't start modding until Brave New World was out.
I was going to say, it's the same. I haven't started modding yet.
Yeah. So it's exactly the same, yeah.
Okay, well, I can perhaps answer that to some extent. I think what happened in Civ 5, as I remember, was that there weren't really many mods before Gods and Kings came out. There were a few mods, and there wasn't really anything going until after Brave New World came out. That's when things really got going. I think what's happened with Civ 6, personally, is that the Civ 5 modding community went en masse onto Civ 6. So before any expansions came out or anything, people were already creating the civs they know and loved from Civ 5. It was already in place. Nowadays, after the first expansions come out, people are still modding, but I think there's that sort of hesitation thinking, hang on a minute, we've got the civs out that we liked now, we're going to wait until it's completed before we do our real run of civs, personally. I know that Civitas are probably slightly different to that, and perhaps Pokil's mods and that ilk, where you're creating certain modules that could be used regardless of any further material from Firaxis. But I think people are quite often hesitant on creating things like Civilizations because they don't know what's yet to come. So, you know, to create a civ and actually whatever mechanics are created by another expansion pack, it may become irrelevant.
I think you're absolutely right. I think you're seeing a lot of two groups of mods, and I'm not specifically talking about the core modders like Sucrit or JFD as much, or Civitas, but you're seeing a lot of gameplay mods, which may or may not be relevant once an expansion comes out, but people won't necessarily care, or they're going to be also relatively easy to update. And then the other thing you're seeing is a lot of mods that are kind of more using the core crate civs, but we're going to use a lot of the core aspects of the game to do them, just kind of riffs of the original mods. There's not a lot of, like, really elaborate creative civs coming out. And I think part of the reason for that is, as you alluded to, is if Firaxis changes, say, Greece's ability somewhat, and you're tied into Greece's ability, then you'll change with them, and you're less likely just to explode, right? So I think you're seeing, at least with civ leaders and civ nations, you're seeing fairly safe ones right now.
It sounds like from what you guys have just said is that Civ 6's modern community took off a lot faster than Civ 5's did, probably because of how Rob said the Civ 5 community largely migrated to Civ 6 right off the bat. My take of it now is that after Rise and Fall, we didn't really see a big glut of mods. I think we've slowed down a lot. I don't know how much of that is anticipation of the next expansion and wondering what's going to be made available as far as modding tools, which I look forward to. You know, what game systems are going to be put in place? What new dynamic modifiers are we going to be able to use? But it doesn't stop me personally because I don't have patience and I figure, oh, I can go ahead and update it later. You know, it would certainly help if the game were complete when I made, like, Religion Expanded, for example, right? Then I would have been able to make beliefs that were, some of them wouldn't be, you know, just flavors of vanilla beliefs. Or I would, you know, I just have more options to have a greater variety of experiences for players to use, you know? But I definitely plan to update after the next theoretical expansion comes out. I also feel like that when it comes out, I'm hoping we're going to see this big glut of mods like you described with Civ 5 after Brave New World. I'm really crossing my fingers for that because that sounds really exciting to have another explosion like that.
Yeah. I mean, each Civ that I've been around since Civ 1, but each one where there's been the expansion packs, which is Civ 2 onwards, the golden era, so to speak, has been started around about a year after the final expansion came out.
Mm.
And then there's maybe 2 years where it was like the prime time for that particular game before all of a sudden the other game being announced in that time but not being ready yet.
Yeah, I think that's probably true in Civ 5 and Brave New World as well, because even though we had a lot of crazy new effects coming out for civilizations for, you know, unique abilities in Civ 5 right up to the end, my perception was a couple of years after Brave New World was released, things were kind of tapering off a little bit as far as the number of new mods we were seeing. Because eventually what happens is you kind of run out of things to do.
And they get harder.
Yeah.
The best way to sort of understand it is imagine kind of a city, and in the middle of the city you have the known dias, which are the ones that Graxis used. And then as you get further away from the middle of the city and away from the city lights, you get into the uncharted territory of, okay, now I'm just doing really crazy stunts. Those mods become much, much more time-consuming.
Right. And that kind of ties into what I was saying about we've used everything. We've done everything. Mm. We have to do this crazy stuff to come up with something new and original,
yeah.
Which also means it takes a lot longer to code it, too.
Right, exactly. And the testing burden is higher.
Yeah.
To toot my own horn, Colonius Legacies Cuba had some really weird stuff around units that could build like a barbarian camp equivalent inside enemy territory, the revolutionaries. And that required me to basically switch in and out technologies based on which units were selected and whether or not they were in enemy territory. That was nuts, and the testing burden on that. I'm still surprised to this day that I've never got an email saying, this thing is totally broken and here's why. The code is just the most nightmarish ball of twine and duct tape that you've ever seen. The unreleased mods that never actually came out of down the tubes are probably twice as complicated. There's a backlog of half a dozen unfinished Colonius Legacies mods that, again, they have some of the weirdest stuff you've ever seen.
And then Secretat and JFD come along and prove us all wrong with two
yeah.
The original. It was after, really, Brave New World came out that they started doing quite a few of these mods that all of a sudden you couldn't really play the game without anymore.
Right.
Events and decisions. There were mods such as that.
I don't mean to mean to Secretech, but I actually hated that mod because everybody wanted me to give compatibility to it.
Yeah.
Most game-changing mod. You know, it's basically an expansion pack in its own right. But from the perspective of a modder, yeah, it was love to hate. Love to play it, love to play mods with it, but at the same time, the amount of work to put into those two events that every modder has, every mod has to have, the mandatory minimum, usually the code base and testing base for the decisions was as big or bigger than the rest of the civilization.
I think those sort of things came out because people had said, right, we've seen what Firaxis have done, they've finished with it now, now we know what effects aren't going to be put into the game. So I don't want to create events and decisions now because Firaxis might do it in the next expansion pack.
Yeah, or they might do disasters or revolutions or something like that. And as a modder, even though I might be able to figure my way out how to do that, and I know some people have with the disasters mod, I don't know that I would want to take that on because who knows what Ed Beat is going to do with the next expansion. You know, and I hate to have all that work suddenly become irrelevant because, hey, Civilization VI, cheeseburgers and hamburgers has now got that in it.
Yeah, but at least they got that idea from me. I was the first.
Well, and I mean, we sort of had that already in Civ 6. There was the Golden Ages mod.
Yes, yes. And basically Rise and Fall does all that.
It was Grey Tiger.
Yeah.
And all of that work may not be worthless, but no one's going to go out of their way with Rise and Fall to run that mod, even if you can. I really don't want that to be the thing that knocks the wind out of his sails and causes him to say, modding is not for me, right?
Right.
It's bad enough having bad comments on your Steam profile for your mods. Having you suddenly get the rug pulled out from underneath you, that can be pretty tough. I know there's lots of modders in Civ 5, people who were established before Brave New World, who would have built Poland or whatever, and then suddenly there's a Brave New World.
Yeah, throw in the towel, I'm done.
Yeah.
And there were two or three World Wonder mods that kind of got obsoleted by it, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But I'm pretty sure they were all done by experienced enough modders that it didn't push them over the edge of, okay, here's the towel, I'm done.
At the very least, even if it's made obsolete by new game systems from the Civ 6 expansion, it's experience you get as a modder, right? Like, now I'm sure that taught him a lot of things about the modding process, and he can hopefully make even bigger projects and different ideas that we can look forward to, you know?
Yeah.
I really enjoy that Civ 6 allows you to have an asset editor now. We can view the models, mix and match the units. I hope they continue to go that direction. Maybe even in the future we can have mix and match buildings and wonders, you know, like take pieces from here and pieces from there and make it even easier. You can do it to a degree with asset editor, but breaking down the models to even more base geometries and having it even more user-friendly. So definitely a good step forward there.
Yeah, I think we definitely need a unit creator. Thing like that. And you're right, the asset editor's great, and there's some people who are fantastic at it, some people who get by, but, you know, it's all a bit tricky. And I probably fall into that latter category.
And then there's the category that I'm in.
I'm in that category too, I think, where if Sucratech and Deliverator are at level 100, I'm at level 0.
I think I could do it if we had some sort of like a pantry or an asset app where I could actually say, okay, put this katana over here and so on and so forth and make it look like a unique unit. If I was able to actually connect pieces from various different models together to make a model, I think that the sky's the limit there as long as you don't have the expectation that you're known for your good models, better than having every unit look like spearsmen.
If Civitas are out there and listening, and want to do a mod that can be incorporated within Anno Domini that's got all their ancient units, then please do it and let me know.
I'm sure that'll be no problem.
Especially if I can then use bits of those models as well, like you can with the Fraxis ones, even better. If we could get either Fraxis or, alternatively, somebody like Sucratat or Civitas, as well as being a mod creators, be creative things other people can create mods with, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, tool makers.
Yeah, almost like, I mean, I remember in Civ 3 bringing out something called an IC toolkit, and it was funny in that sense, but it had the leader head you could use. It was just created. It's not something that actually was the Civ. There were maybe about half a dozen different buildings. There were a couple of units, two or three units. So the modder could then go on and create their own Arsini. But it was almost like that, you know, create your own Egypt Civ, you know? That'd be great.
Yeah, I think the problem with everybody's having with, and this may also be one of the reasons why seems to be a perceived slowdown in modding, is that, yeah, we can do a lot more with graphic stuff, but the process is a little more difficult to follow through.
Yes. I agree with that 100%. It's harder to your head around. And even though Rise and Fall added new units and buildings and other assets and whatever expansions next will as well, those assets aren't included in the asset editor yet, so people can't play with them. So we have more content, but we're still being limited in how much of the content that Firaxis puts out that we can actually manipulate and use. I remember being totally flummoxed by art definitions and the XLPs and the BLPs. But anyone listening, there is this tool that the Crazy Scotsman made that automatically creates your mod art file for you so that your .dep file when you cook your mod is correct. That tool is a miracle. The art stuff can be intimidating to just make your units and districts and whatever else you do to show up, even just using vanilla graph.
Yeah, I second that.
I still love this game and I still love modding. So I think there will be a point when I'm able to dedicate time to it again.
Yeah.
It'll probably coincide with the second expansion finishing and the year, and I'm probably just retreading the same ground as I did in Civ 5. So at that point, it would be really great to know what all of the different steps are.
I've had less time to deal with Civ this year. Just changed jobs now. I am now an IT business analyst.
All that stuff's Rob's fault now.
Yeah.
Yep.
With breaking my mod and needing to start again, it just seems like such a mountain to climb to do all that.
Yep.
And do need to do that when Firaxis, by the time I finished it, Firaxis no doubt will be on the verge of bringing out a new expansion which will change everything. And I'm better just waiting until that's done. And in the meantime, there's people that keep shouting at me on Steam to update Illyria and Fund and the Iceni to be compatible with Rise and Fall, which I still haven't done. So I guess that will keep me going for then, and probably learning some of the skills and things like adding textures to buildings, which I still can't do, but I know the tutorials are out there. That'll keep me going in the meantime. Pockiel, thanks for coming along. You've done quite a lot of mods yourself over the last year or two. Which one's your personal favorite?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. My personal favorite that I've done, I guess I have to say Religion Expanded. That was something that I personally really wanted to do. I really wanted to get rid of that religion limit, and I worked on that mod for quite a long time. I have to say that it was definitely a collaborative effort. It was my first big project, and Chimpanzee was so nice to hold my hand and texturing and getting new assets to show up, because I was totally overwhelmed with that. I had no idea how I'd ever get a new looking building to show up or reuse assets. So I owe a big part of that success to him having a lot of patience with me. I was bouncing ideas off constantly. A lot of people were really helpful with ideas. And I think that mod got a pretty good reception, more than I expected, honestly. I thought that my idea for, hey, let's remove these religion limits and let's have everyone have a religion would not go well, because what I like tends to not be popular. But, you know, I tried to make it a little bit modular, and I've given instructions on Steam on how to scale back the amount of great profits you can get. I regret that I wasn't able to find a way to make some, like, game setting option that allows you to choose how many great profits on this map. I think I even asked you, Lee, once if that was possible. And I think you gave me an explanation of why it's not. But that one, I think, was a game changer. I really, really have fond memories of making that mod. I like that a lot.
Currently at number one in the Steam download charts is your Ancient Egyptian Pantheons.
Oh.
Yeah, it's bonus then for Religion Expanded.
That one was more of a fun thing. The icons and stuff are from the Gifts of the Nile scenario. And I was playing that scenario and I thought, oh, these are really nice icons. It'd be a shame to not use them. I like the theme a lot. They were really strong in that scenario. Like, the one for Horus, which I ported right over, was giving you an extra wild card policy slot, which is, you know, no bones about it. That's OP. That's crazy. But I thought it was fun and saucy, so I wanted to make a mod based off that. I knew I'd have a lot of comments about, oh, this isn't balanced or this or that. So that's why I didn't make it part of Religion Expanded, so to speak. I wanted to make it optional. But yeah, that's what I really like. I like fun stuff like that. That's not going to cater to people who necessarily just want to load up CQUI and have an actual multiplayer game with rules. I want to make it fun for people who are more into, like, role-playing in their games, or just maybe loading up an online game with their friend and doing a comp stop or something, you know? That's how I find Civ fun to play, and so that's why I like to release these little flavor mods for people who have the same idea.
Yeah, so that'll be why you've done things like Improved Egypt, I presume.
So, yeah, there are certain things that I like in a Civ. I'm personally not a big fan of anything that requires you to, like, have a full military to take advantage of it. I like abilities that will have a lot of diversity where you're not going to be locked out of it from one playstyle. So those improved whatever civs started off with that idea. I've abandoned all those mods, and I'm working on a bigger project with Civitas called Civilizations Expanded, which is going to have every single civ involved. I'm probably going to write in support for mod civs as long as individual modders, but based on their permissions. And that will affect everything, kind of like a global buff that affects leader abilities, civ abilities, unique infrastructure, and unique units to basically what I think would be fun. But at the same time, trying to balance it all around a central point, like, okay, this is the level of power I'm going for, and let's see if we can bring everyone else up to that level and still have unique ideas. Now, that one's a slog because it requires so many ideas, and it's what we talked about before, where we're potentially there will be a second expansion, and potentially there will be new systems introduced. So right now I'm working with probably a more limited palette than I would have before, and maybe I'll have to go back and revisit some stuff if there's a second expansion. It makes it hard to not kind of retread the same territory, which is why I'm taking a lot longer with that. I've been working on that for a long time. My beta build has over 65 uploads on it now. Like, I've uploaded it 65 times trying to just tweak stuff. I'm also quite fond of Vibrant Waters, which I think was more popular than I expected it to be. I alter the color of freshwater, so rivers, lakes, certain natural wonders, to not be such a dark blue, which it's a personal thing. I just never found it that appealing. I much preferred Civ Vibes aesthetic, where all the water kind of looked like it came from the same pool, if you guys know what I'm saying. Like, all of it had this emerald green quality to it, and I found that uniformity pretty. So that's where I was kind of coming from on that.
Yeah, from my perspective, although I don't know if that's actually true under the scenes, it looks like Vibrant Water basically makes lakes have kind of the same aesthetic quality as shallow water in Civ 6, as opposed to right now, all lakes kind of have this ocean water aesthetic.
Yeah, that's exactly it, and that's where I started off. I thought, okay, let me just see if I can port over the coastal water to the lakes and see what happens. Unfortunately, it wasn't that simple, but that was the basis of it, and that's what I kind of balanced everything around. So I wanted to make sure my rivers would match with that shade of blue, that the natural wonders would go well with it. Yeah, I love the coastal water texture in Civ 6. It's so beautiful to me. Nice and blue and translucent. I love that a lot. So that was 100% the basis for it. And again, not everyone's cup of tea, but it was my vision.
Mm-hmm. I think my favorite mod that you've done is the Precinct of Amun-Ra.
Ah, thank you.
I really like that, yeah. The unique holosite, really, for Egypt, and, I'm going to use it for the pumped as well, maybe.
Yeah.
Adding just a nice little flavor that's unique to that area, it's just really nice, yeah.
Oh, thanks, man. I like that one quite a lot, too. And I got a lot of requests, oh, are you going to do this for Japan or for East Asian cultures or for North American cultures? And I'd love to, but it's so, you know, that's hard. That's a lot of time spent with all these assets. And I don't know if I have this many ideas. I wonder if you guys agree with this, that all the systems introduced, policies, governors, dedications, all these are on the same idea of modifiers, right? And it's so, and like, well, city-state bonuses, it's so hard to just not step on the toes of anything else and do the exact same abilities. It kind of drives me batty sometimes that I can't think of something else to do, you know? I find that really challenging. So the idea of making 30-something odd unique districts with all different abilities and stuff, I feel like I couldn't do it.
Well, and I mean, I think that is the drawback of the modifier system. I mean, the obvious benefit of the modifier system is that it lowers the you must now script things in Lua, right? That bar that made it hard for people to get actually into making decent mods. You can go very far with modifiers. But if you can't go there, if you can't reach your dream with a modifier, then you're basically stuck, right?
Yeah, there are very few things that Lua can cure if you can't do it with a modifier.
Right. And so, you know, that kind of just becomes this problem, especially if you're looking at unique cultural districts. I think that's where it would hurt the most, would be, okay, I want to make something really unique for this culture. Okay, but no, I actually just have to fit it inside, kind of like well within the bounds of the current systems. Firaxis didn't go, and for obvious reasons, I think that they would have scutted the actual game project if they had done this, but they didn't think to go way out of the bounds of the current systems just to allow modders to build weird things.
Well, you both touch on a great point. So as Lee said, and you said, you know, Lua is more limited this time around. And on the other side of that, we have modifiers, which are easier for people to use, like me, but you don't have as many possibilities with them. And then compounding it is the fact that there's just more things that have abilities now.
Right.
It's overwhelming sometimes. That's why a lot of modders, I think, maybe are waiting for another expansion to come out, because we want to see how much they open this. Or maybe even potentially if they release the DLL. And I suspect that if the source is released for Civ 6, I feel like I'm envisioning maybe sort of like a Communitas-esque thing for that, where it's opened up and then and maybe it enables all modders to sort of use that and build off that and have even more unique abilities with modifiers or Lua or something. That would be ideal, I think, but I don't know if we'll ever get that. Do you guys actually think we'll get a DLL?
I don't know. I can see reasons on both sides of the coin when, as far as why Phyrexis would or maybe they would not release it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just flabbergasted that there was one in the fat past, right?
It took multiple years before Phyrexis released the DLL for Civ 5. They didn't release it right away.
Phyrexis slash 2K is kind of notorious in the strategy gaming world for being tight-lipped or not necessarily the most open about with their modding and stuff like that. So even to say we're going to release this thing that essentially tells you that our release schedule for Civ 5 is done is really not their style.
Right. Yeah.
If you go on Reddit right now and you ask for access, hey, are you working on another expansion? You're going to get radio silence.
Yeah.
There's no talking about it. So to even, like, open up a DLL, my goodness, and let people play around with your source, I'm surprised it ever happened. So do I think it'll happen? Probably.
I know that a lot of the Civ 6 modders, I guess while we sort of wait and see what's going to be possible with any other updates and everything, I think maybe there's a little bit of burnout with Civ 6 already. Maybe because everyone got started so early in it.
Some various natural wonders.
I think we've had this recent influx of them from Sucrosact, and then followed up by Terra Mirabilis from the Liberator and Chimpanzee, which I think is one of the greatest mods ever. It's so beautiful. That's a game changer. I cannot say enough good things about that mod. And it seems like Deliberator and Sucrosact have just cracked wide open the possibility of making new natural wonders.
I think the thing that I find the most interesting right now with Natural Wonders, and maybe it's just because that modders like Sucrit and modders like Deliberator have probably been bursting at the seams for the last game, was custom Natural Wonders were basically impossible in Civ 5. And so you had certain groups that would create, like, World Wonders in Troves. Pwakai has, I think, over 200 World Wonders, you know, the buildings, but almost no Natural Wonders in Civ 5. Then if you open up Civ 6, there's almost no custom world wonders, but the natural wonders are just starting to spill in, and I think you're going to find that I would probably predict like an equal number of naturals to world wonders. I think there's probably a reason, like a gameplay balance reason for that, which is if you played with like 100 different world wonders, all of a sudden there's more world wonders in your tech tree than there are buildings, right? But that never happens with natural wonders, so you can just go nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all just gorgeous. Some of them are very recognizable from Civ 5.
Mm-hmm. Sucrotax's design philosophy for wonders is he's releasing them one at a time, like giving them piecemeal so people can sort of do, you know, like William Howard's pick and mix sort of thing, pick which ones you want and do this and that. And Deliberator and Chimpanzee have gone with the approach of they're releasing droves at once. So Terra Mirabilis, I think, has 13, right?
Yep.
In addition to that, it also has changes to gameplay systems, things that alter how naturalists work, things that alter how districts and natural wonders interact, things that alter how natural wonders are placed on the map. And I think that's an interesting dichotomy in modding styles. And I'll start off with saying this, that when I learned of the changes that they were going to put with Terra Mirabilis to alter natural wonders, I wasn't excited at first. I thought, oh, I mean, why fix what isn't broken? I'll give it a shot, but after playing with it, I was really pleasantly surprised with the changes, and I love seeing three times as many natural wonders in the map. And I also love the fact that there's a nice user settings file you can customize. I thought that approach was bold, and it paid off personally for me, because I think it gave me something I didn't know I wanted, if that makes any sense. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to switch on the other side and say, because I'm currently running a game with Terra Mirabilis.
Mm-hmm.
The density is just that it feels to me in the game that I'm playing that natural wonders are now a mandatory requirement for every city.
oh, because everyone's going to be able to have a chance to have one. So if you don't have one, you feel like it's going to be a handicap.
Right.
Right.
And I mean, right now in the game, I have 4 cities, and they're all on a natural wonder.
Yeah, yeah, because Phyrexis' original concept with natural wonders in Civ 6 is that it's nice to have them, but they're not a win push button.
Right.
And if you basically change that to every city's got to have one, or at least you got to have at least one or two of these natural wonders, or you're just going to lose, then, yeah, that might really be an issue.
You know, I'm not hating on the game. What I am feeling, though, is that just feeling of, like, okay, I have a settler now, and maybe it's because I'm a scrub. You know, low-tier player skill, that instead of me trying to say, okay, where's the best spot for me to put this because I need a port town now, and it's got to have positions for me to build a good harbor, and I need to, whatever, I'm just kind of going, do I settle next to Uluru, or do I settle next to Mount Kalish?
Mm-hmm. I 100% hear your point of view on that. Talking to Chimpanzee, I know that he's working on figuring out how to make some of these options, like, that are in the user settings file as part of the game setup UI, which I would really like, too, because then you can change it on the fly. And like you said, then that'll put the kibosh on any sort of potential multiplayer issues if there is different versions of the user settings SQL file. So hopefully that's coming. But as far as how it changes the gameplay like that, I disagree. I don't...
That's good.
I don't feel obligated to find the natural wonder. I guess what the crux of it for me is why I like it is when I see a natural wonder, I'm always excited now. And before, I wasn't always excited by some of the abilities. I like things that make me change my focus. So if I'm having my scout explore and then, oh, I see the barrier reef now, or I see Great Blue Hole on that coast, or I see that volcano, I forgot the name of it, Krakatoa, then I want to shoot for it. That's going to alter my gameplay. It makes it a little more dynamic for me. But I definitely see how the glut of them that's enabled by default can alter it in a way that maybe you're not pleased with, or that kind of changes the focus in a way that you don't want it to be changed.
I mean, I think that you have really valid points, because it's true, you know, what you just said, where it's like, okay, so I love natural wonders. They're a great part of the game. There's going to be 10 of them on this map. Okay, I found 5 of them, and I'm already kind of feeling like this map has 3 natural wonders.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
I think that really, and major props to Deliverator and Chimpanzee on this, all of them are good now.
Right.
So then I think part of what comes to this feeling of I'm only going to settle on natural wonders. And again, like I said, maybe it's just because I'm a scrub player and other people are like, really? He's going to settle on all the natural wonders? Like, this guy just doesn't know what he's doing, because how is he going to get districts that are next to districts that are next to districts? I am being critical of the mod, but I actually think it's great. With the base game, I don't go out of my way to settle cities on natural wonders. I actually just think that I would love a slider that let me control it, because I feel like triple the amount of natural wonders is way too much, but double is probably better, because right now the problem is that, especially with agendas and especially with the sprawl that are our cities, I mean that in a good way, like the unpacked cities, often when you're playing in the base game, you find your 10 natural wonders, you can't get anywhere near them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Second of all, there is this whole thing of, like, I'm going to pick on Galapagos and say, often I'll find natural wonders, especially some of the multi-tile ones, and I'll look at them and go, there's no reason I actually want that to be there, other than that now that I know that there's this nice multi-tile, the natural wonder that's kind of a ring, I definitely am going to try to get Charles Darwin so I can stick him right in the middle of Galapagos and fire him off for, like, ridiculous amounts of science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a valid gameplay thing. So that's where I would love a slider, where I could say, okay, what's the distance between natural wonders? To give credit where credit's due, I'm actually changing my gameplay style to match the fact that this mod, where now I suddenly feel more obligated to get natural wonders with every city, even if I find that to be less than ideal because it just becomes this thing, as opposed to me saying, oh, the thing with out-of-the-box natural wonders is basically, yeah, if they're in your starting location, that's great, but if they're not, then I'm not really, really going out of my way to get them, especially not that one and that one and that one. That's not a bad thing. I think that Chimpanzee and Deliverator should be proud of how good this mod is.
I think that any mod that shoves you, whether it forces you to or whether it tends to make you, shoves you out of your in-the-box playstyle, that's probably a good mod. Unless it's so crazy overpowered that it's just silly. But to follow up on that, any mod that provides, if you get this, whether it's a world wonder, a natural wonder, or you find this resource, it's like an instant win push button. then in my opinion, that's a bad mod.
Yeah, and I would not call that this because simply because everyone gets it, right?
I agree that any mod that allows you to get out of the box and do that is good. That's also what I attempted for Religion Expanded. If you read discussions of non-modded Civ 6, people will say, oh, religion's not worth it. I'm going to play on Immortal or Deity, and I'm not going to get a religion. And if I do, the beliefs aren't good. They're not worth my time. A holy site isn't worth prolonging my campus, and I'm just going to forget it, right? That was what I had in mind for Religion Expanded. I think that overall, the people who use it would agree that, yeah, okay, now religion's useful. That's why I like it. So I did get feedback that, I don't like having this many religions at once, which, again, is regrettable that I couldn't add a slider in it. Or maybe I can in the future, who knows, but that I haven't been able to figure out how to make a slider work and change the great prophets or whatever. It changed my playstyle, you know? And so same thing with these natural wonders. Without Terra Mirabilis or without having good natural wonders like Great Blue Hole, I see them and I want them, but I'm also going to, like, hurt myself because maybe they're not that good and I'm not too excited about it. But with the changes induced by having interesting natural wonders like Supertact and Chimpanzee and Deliberator are doing definitely have altered the way I see the game and play the map. And, yeah, I agree that that's a good barometer for how to say what a good gameplay mod does or doesn't do.
The goals.
Yeah, we mentioned before about how a good mod forces you out of your play style. So now with the Gauls, I think it's the Civ ability that you want to settle on mineable resources, and then it spreads that bonus to the surrounding tiles. And that's something I never do. I'm a scrub like Narai, so I don't like to settle on resources even when it's optimal because I think they're pretty. So the Gauls, when I play that, it makes me do that, which is totally not what I usually do. And that's even the case with their unique improvement. And overall, man, the presentation on Gauls is great. The animation, the way the leader looks, everything. It was exactly what I hoped it would be. What a great Civ.
Yeah, well, it made me think when I was playing it. So I had a game with it. I played it a couple of times, but I had a mineable resource about 3 or 4 moves out from where my original settler was. So I have to make the decision, do I want to settle where my settler originally was and start the game going, or do I want to waste the first 3 turns to actually get to a mineable resource, which ultimately will give me more production modifier on more tiles?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Even at that level, makes you think.
Yeah, definitely. I'm the kind of person where the map spawns me and I settle no matter what. I don't like to move my settler. But with the Gauls, I did move my settler for the exact same reasons. Yeah, that's another really good example.
And, of course, it's well presented, like you say, some great art. The Oathsworn's great, the Dunnan's great, it all looks fantastic, and it does something a little bit different. I do like the Dunnan with the extra housing and everything and the defense strength, and the fact that you can only build 1 per city is interesting as well.
You know, it's something that was mentioned earlier in our discussion that there's fewer things with Lua that you can do that you can't do with modifiers, but I think the Oathsworn's ability is a good example. What is it that when it dies, it heals everyone around it? And that's Lua, and I think that's a really novel use, a really novel ability. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that really works well when trying to take a city. Your units are down to right down to the bottom of the strength, and it's like, just if there were just that little bit more left, I'd probably be able to take the city, and, you know, I might lose them or move them away. That just gives that extra boost for that. So that's the one thing. The only thing that personally I don't like about it is that he's got the Scottish music to go with it. There isn't anything else that can go with it. The Scottish music is just so inherently Scottish to me and nothing to do with the Gauls. You know, that needs to change, but I don't think he can at the moment. What we need, of course, is for Firaxis to allow us to add our own music, and I think that's something that we haven't got at the moment, so hence he's had to do that.
Yeah. My first thought, if I was making a Gaul mod, I'm not sure I would have used the Syndetorix, because he didn't actually do all that well. But it's just...
He's the well-known guy. He is
he is really the first guy to actually try to unite Gaul. But then that didn't go so well with him, because he ran up against that guy called Julius Caesar. That didn't end up for him.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
A thank you to lead patron Candace Albinus and all other supporters of the show through this measure. For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Calling today in North America, the number is 301-637-7659. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Modcast, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
If I'm somebody who is not a modder, but a player of mods, and I think to myself, right, I want to play, let's say, a game based in North America with all the tribes, etc. Is it better that there's somebody that's specialising in the northern tribes, so you get quite a few, or would it be better if all the houses had sort of mixed it up a bit, so I get sort of your take on one tribe, I get somebody else doing another tribe, so there's that variety? Or do you think the fact that you love that particular area means that you're going to really do it well? So is that better? I don't know.
My initial take on that is I feel like it's better to have a lot of different groups of people sort of maybe doing the same region. The last thing you said, Rob, about how it might just be, you know, one person's take on the entire region. What if you're during that person's idea or flavor just doesn't sit well with you, then potentially that whole region of mods is not going to be interesting to you anymore. So I think it's good, as long as no one's feelings get hurt and everyone is okay with it in the modding community, that people can sort of get involved in the same regions. And that way, I think it makes for a much more dynamic user experience, because you don't have sort of the same patterns when you're getting all these saves from the same area.
Yeah, I mean, I can sort of answer historically for that. If you're going to play, say, North America, pre-colonial North America, that is synonymous with Colonialist Legacies mods, but you would be absolutely remiss to not play with Tomatex Sioux or Sucrit's Chinook and Three Affiliated Tribes mod, Iger, Caesar, Apache. You'd absolutely be missing out if you just stayed with Colonialist Legacies.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, we did kind of shy away from each other's stuff once somebody started working in those areas.
One thing that we ask our guests frequently, I'd like to ask you, is if you could choose one thing to go into the next expansion, and it was totally your pick, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good question. I want to see the Free Cities concept fleshed out more. I want to have cities rebel and then become their own empires. I want revolutions, all that in one mechanic. Like, the general gist of that idea would just be phenomenal to me. That's what I'm looking forward to. Hopefully that happens.
Thank you for listening to Modcast 79. My name's Rob, R8XFT. With me today were...
Nirai the Forgiven.
Lee S.
Pokeel. Rob, Lee, Nirai, thank you so much for having me on here. It was an absolute pleasure.
Dan would have to edit out anything I would say about why I think that's so.
Poor Dan.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, what, did that stun you that much that it stun you into silence? Or?
I was agreeing in silence.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. To backtrack to what I was about to say, because I went down a different tangent. That never happens.
No.
So that's the thing that happens, I think, that makes modding, especially when there's a lot of mods being dropped all at the same time that are all good and people want, it actually really revolutionizes that script, because you may have the script, but you're not going to be able to follow it to the letter.
Yeah. I just want to say something that was relevant about 5-6 minutes ago, but I couldn't get a word in.
That's my feeling on the pitch.
Yeah.
So especially when John gets going.
Yeah, I know. It's all good stuff, though, don't worry.
It's a very good idea.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm going to have to write it down on my list of very good ideas.
Oh, yeah, please do. copyright, RHXFT. that's it for today, everyone. Joining me on Modcast 79 were...
Silence, apparently.
Okay. By the way, we're going to have to do the introductions yes. at some point.
Yeah.
Record date,
the 25th of August 2018.
Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.